Today's presenters are Syria Durgarali and Bhushan Lakhandi. Syria is an advisory software engineer of IBM Software Group. He is a security team lead responsible for performance and architecture of WebSphere security runtime. Prior to this, he was a team lead for WebSphere process choreographer responsible for performance and architecture of BPEL engine. He has over 10 years of experience in various fields of computer industry, including object-oriented programming, application architecture, and performance. Bhushan is a staff software engineer of IBM Software Group. He is a performance lead responsible for 6.02 and 6.1 service pack runtime performance. He leads WISE 6.1 cross-platform performance and tuning guide development efforts. He has over 6 years of IT experience in application programming, system performance, and automatic computer benchmarking. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Syria and Bhushan.
Thank you, Elijah, for the kind introduction. And hello, everyone. I'm Bhushan Lakhandi from WebSphere Application Server Performance. We hope this webcast will be good learning to you all. This presentation has been targeted towards WebSphere Application Server 6.1, and we will focus on base application server runtime. Today, we will go through some new performance-centric features available in WebSphere version 6.1 relevant to JDK and EJB, and we will cover how tuning can be done to exploit those features. Please note, last year at WSTE, we covered two sessions on advanced WebSphere application server tuning. Those presentations are recorded and archived on WSTE site. So in today's session, we will cover content only relevant to WAS 6.1 and some topics we have not covered in those presentations. For general tuning of JDK, EJB, and other components, please refer to those archived webcasts. Also, quick advertisement before we begin. Tomorrow, we will have another webcast on WebSphere Application Server Security Performance. This webcast will present the security overhead data for enabling different aspects of security in WAS 6.1. And then we will go in a deep dive on how tuning can be done to optimize performance with these security enabled. So if you are interested, please attend it. Slide 3, please. So here is the agenda for today's webcast. We will briefly cover the performance improvements and features that went in WebSphere Application Server version 6.1 and give ballpark number on how much improvement should be expected moving to 6.1. Then we will talk about JDK-centric performance features, as introducing IBM JDK 5 was big highlight of version 6.1 release. And we will talk about JDK 5 performance tuning with focus on understanding and tuning the GenCon, that is Generational Concurrent GC Policy. Note, this presentation is focused on IBM JDK 5, which is part of WAS 6.1. Most of the concepts apply to non-IBM JDKs too. However, we are covering specifics about IBM JDK 5. And towards end of the presentation in resources slide, we have mentioned link that gives documentation for tuning Sun and HP JDK. Lastly, we will talk about some EJB and other runtime tunings that can be done to get further performance gain with WAS 6.1. Slide 4, please. This chart shows the historical performance improvements of J2EE over the time. The chart moves across the J2EE spec level as well as the WebSphere application server level from version 4 to version 6.1. These performance numbers are obtained with our internal benchmark trade, or I should say with different versions of trade, modified as J2EE spec level change. And these numbers are obtained on same hardware systems, so absolutely no extrapolation. You can see that over the last 6 years, J2EE performance has improved by 4.2x. These improvements are from J2EE spec level changes, that is from J2EE 1.4 to J2EE 1.4, as well as from WAS runtime improvements over the time. Note, these performance numbers are dependent on application and topology. The trade benchmark application used here is very well-written J2EE application bias and is typically considered as blueprint of J2EE best practices. So remember, a well-written application is key to achieve the optimum performance. Again, just as an FYI, next month we are releasing a red book titled Designing and Coding Application for Performance and Scalability in WebSphere Application Server. And this red book is focused on coding practices for performance for WAS 6.1, So watch out for this red book. Slide 5, please. Let's talk quickly about what is new in WASP 6.1 from performance perspective. Honestly, this chart can alone take next 30 minutes. However, since we are here to talk about WASP 6.1 tuning, I will quickly give overview of performance improvements that went in WASP 6.1. Starting from top left side, Java version 1.5. Probably the biggest improvements in version 6.1 is from JDK 1.5. For platforms that ship with IBM JDK, we have switched to new JDK called J9, which is our homegrown JDK 1.5. This JDK has drastic JIT and GC improvements, and we will be talking more about it in later slides. Web container has improved performance and scalability. As you all might be knowing that in WASP 6.0, we introduced new transport channel service, non-blocking I.O., that is NIO, which provides high scalability by supporting non-blocking threading and allows for large number of concurrently connected clients to be supported by fewer threads. So NIO worked well and was okay. However, it was not great for very lightweight applications. Here we had overhead from extra context switch inside the JVM. So what we have done in WASP 6.1 is we are utilizing the underlying OS asynchronous I/O support as much as possible. Now, instead of JVM doing the processing, we register the threads inside the JVM directly with the kernel and accept the request right off the TCP stack, and they come in much quicker to us. So moving to AIO, lighter weight application will see much big improvement. We have seen performance improvement of around 30% switching between NIO and AIO. Just so that you all are aware, if for some reason AIO has some issues, it can be disabled, and WebSphere version 6.1 will default back to NIO, similar to one in version 6.0. Also, in Web Container, we have done lots of code path improvements to burn less CPU and get more hits per second. And memory-to-memory HTTP session replication performance is improved a lot in WASP 6.1. Here we have worked in low-level network code to help serialize deserialize sessions quicker. Going to EJBs, you will see performance improvement in EJBs from code path improvements, lightweight entity beans, higher performance access intent setting, and read-only beans. We will be talking more about these features and other runtime improvements later in the presentations. Web services. WebSphere Application Server version 6.1 provides significant improvements in web services. We have improvements from improved deserialization of XML, which is probably one of the bigger costs as far as web services go. We also have improved caching algorithm and bunch of code path improvements. And web services is using the new underlying AIO infrastructure in web container and will gain further improvements from it. Our testing has shown web container web services performance improvement across all payload sizes over version 6.02, and these improvements range from 35% to 65%. Next, in-process messaging. As you all will be familiar, we have switched to Java-based in-process messaging in WASP 6.0. Here, CloudScape database was used as a default data store to persist messages, although you can wire it up to DB2, Oracle, SQL Server, etc. However, by default, it was CloudScape, which was a little bit slow. So in version 6.1, we have introduced file system-based message store, which is default store to persist messages. This is still configurable, and you can switch it back and forth between file store and relational database. What we have seen is, for lightweight messaging and for messaging intensive application, persisting messages to file store gives better performance than actually going to CloudScape or another database on different system. Of course, this is with assumption that you have passed enough disk system on your app server box. Also, the file store implementation provides significantly high throughput compared to the local database store, and this is mainly because with local database store, the application server and database are competing for the same CPU cycles and L3 cache. Next, going to dynamic fragment caching. In version 6.1, WebSphere dynamic caching can be configured as in-memory and or disk cache. And most of the DynaCache improvements are in the disk cache infrastructure. Lastly, startup time and memory footprint improvements. IBM JDK 5 provides significant improvement in startup time and memory footprint out of box due to shared class and class cache. Shared class. With WAF 6.1, we have added ability where multiple JVMs on same systems are able to share the non-changing class files among each other, thereby limiting the memory overhead on each JVM. Typically for base WebSphere install with this feature, we have seen each additional JVM uses about 30 meg less memory with shared class. Going to class cache, these shared class are stored in class cache in the shared memory, which helps in providing faster startup for all the instances once the cache is set. So lots of content glossed over in this slide. If someone is interested in more details on any specific features, please contact us and we will be glad to share more information. And we will be talking about JDK and EJB improvements in the later slides. Slide 6, please. The cross-platform comparisons that you are going to see on next charts, be very, very careful with them. As the hardware platforms used to collect data is not very directly comparable in size, power, and price, what you can really expect from this chart is performance difference between 602 and 61 across the supported platform. So don't compare Solaris versus AIX versus Linux versus etc. Slide 7, please. Slide 7, yeah. Cross-platform comparison. This chart shows comparison of various throughputs for using our internal benchmark application Braid. So you all can see version 6.1 performs significantly better than version 6.02 across all platforms with improvements ranging from 10% to 45%. These performance improvements are due to improved web container performance and scalability coming from implementation of AIO, enhanced caching feature, and JSP engine enhancement. We also have observed improvements in EJB performance, which is attributed to reduction in port path throughout the runtime, higher performance access intent settings, and improved persistent manager. One thing you might notice is more significant performance gain on AIX, Linux, iSeries, and Windows platforms, and these are due to enhancement in IBM JVM 5. IBM JVM version 5 performance improvements are due to various optimization in JIT compiler, new memory allocation technique, and garbage collection schemes with varying characteristics. Slide 8, please. Let's talk a little bit more about IBM JDK performance improvements. Since I have mentioned that IBM JDK 5 has been the biggest performance improvement going in WAF 6.1. IBM version of JDK 5, we call it J9, is basically a clean room implementation of JVM for the first time. So no Sun code, no Sun IP. IBM JDK JIT now is much more intelligent. It generates code specific to the platforms, leveraging the different instruction sets available underneath in the hardware. Also, JIT before used to be kind of static. That is, after a method has run for a certain number of times, I will compile it and forget about it. Now we are doing sampling and profiling. The whole time it is profiling and seeing what are the hot methods now and recompiling them so that they are more efficient with aggressive level of optimization. Please note, the side effect of this is slightly higher ramp-up time. So don't expect optimum performance with ramp-up time of 30 seconds or so. As per our testing, good ramp-up is at least around 3 minutes. Next, asynchronous compilation. Now we have a background thread that is doing all the jitting. It is not on the method thread. And the idea behind is to keep the response time in customer code as consistent as possible. We also have improved garbage collection feature inside JDK. Now we have generational collector, that is GenCon, inside JVM. We will be talking about this policy and other policy later in the slide. And then no residual fragmentation. Residual fragmentation is one which cannot be removed by compaction in GC cycle. IBM JDK 5, there are no pinned and dosed objects, and other fragmentations can be removed using compaction in GC cycle. Again, to get all details on enhancements going in IBM JVM version 5, please refer to the development work articles we have mentioned in the resources link. Okay, so we are on slide 9. Now let's get in the meat of presentation. Tuning. JVM is the key tuning component of VAS, and you can get 80% of maximum possible performance from JVM by basically tuning two key parameters. And heat size is one tuning that will give you max bang for your buck. Note, our earlier webcast goes in much detail on procedure and practices on how to tune the heap size, so we will not cover that. Still, to quickly give the GC tuning methodology, tuning VM is an iterative process where you stress your application and measure throughput during steady state of the benchmark to ensure consistent results. You have to analyze the verbose GC using GC analysis tools to determine the correct heap size. And remember, in this iterative process, change one thing at a time to measure its impact alone. There are very well written articles on IBM developer works which talks about process and practices to size the heap. We would recommend you to refer to them to get the in-depth details. Still, to give rule of thumb, always have the average time between GC at least 5 to 6 times the average duration of single GC, and try to keep 30% of your heap free most of the time. Next, ensure that you are sizing heap so that you are under physical memory limitation. Remember, not only the heap size, but the process size needs to be contained within the physical memory. So keep eye on eye if paging is happening when you are tuning GC. To talk about process size, it has two parts, Java heap and native heap. Let's talk a little bit more on native heap. Native heap is used for virtual machine resources like execution engine, class loader, garbage collector infrastructure. It is used to underpin the Java objects like threads, classes, zip files, and it is used for allocation by JNI code. So you have to watch out for what is the native heap of your process. And you can get estimate of native heap by monitoring the verbose GC for Java heap and Java process size from tools like Perfmon and SVMon. Again, the net over here is like you need to ensure that process size is well within the physical memory limitation. For Sun and HP JVM, there are many knobs to tune. However, aggressive heap is a key parameter introduced in JDK 1.4 and it does the autonomic tuning. Aggressive heap is recommended for server applications requiring high performance and scalability and can greatly ease the performance tuning efforts. So use this parameter. And also remember to run with dash server options, which takes server long to start up and may consume significant resources. However, it does aggressive jitting. Now in VAS 6.1 with JDK 5, JDK 5 attempts to detect the platform on which it is running and set the JVM mode appropriately. So typically the default would be server option, however ensure that you are running with dash server option. And to get more details on tuning Sun and HP JVM, please refer to the links mentioned on the resources slide to refer to their JVM tuning guide. Slide 10, please. The common question asked usually is, which specific garbage collection scheme should I use? Let's talk briefly about them. IBM JVM has 4 garbage collection algorithms that you can run inside the application server. Optimize for throughput. This is the default out-of-box GC policy. This is the flat heap mode, simplest form of GC, mark, sweep, stop the world garbage collector. This policy is optimized for throughput. Like for batch applications, something which you would like to complete in shorter amount of time, this would be the GC policy. This is a parallel GC collector and uses all the available processors. So if you have lots and lots of processors on your machine, you might want to narrow down these GC threads. Slide 11, please. Concurrent GC. This GC is optimized for pause time. Stop the world phase in GC is expensive, especially for applications having response time criteria, and concurrent GC are designed to minimize the stop the world phase as much as possible. It does so by doing some of the marking and sweeping as application is running. Here we have slight overhead on throughput. In many cases we have seen stop the world phase has been dropped to 5 to 10% than what it was before for the cost of 5% in throughput. So for most customers with response time as criteria, this is not a worry and is worth paying the cost. This policy is most widely used with WebSphere Stack and it does show great benefits. Slide 12, please. Subpooling. Subpooling is similar to flat heap model, except that it is optimized for larger systems on Power and Z architecture. 8 CPU plus is really where you would want to use this policy. What it does is, it avoids contention on heap lock when you got large systems, like 16 or 32 logical processors. It divides heap up in the amount of processor and each processor accesses the divided heap area. Slide 13. GenCon is a new policy added in IBM JDK 5. It has been in Sun JDK from a while. Let's talk more about this policy in next few slides. Motivation here is the majority of objects in any programs will have very short lifespan, and this is especially true for transactional workloads with not very long transactions. They are created, used, and abandoned rapidly. To use analogy, in classical garbage collection scheme, these objects are responsible for much of the heap fragmentation. With GenCon policy, the generational collector attempts to identify and clear these objects from memory as early as possible. So the goal over here is to keep young object in nursery, which can be cheaply and frequently reclaimed as they die, and objects that survive are moved to different area where garbage collections run infrequently, if at all. In this way, what we hope to achieve is spread garbage collection overhead across frequent but shorter calls so that garbage collection stalls and delays are kept to minimum, and minimize the garbage collection cycles by expanding them on the objects which are most likely to be collected. This policy is promising for transaction workload having lots of short-lived objects or with applications doing lots of caching. In this case, long-lived objects move to tenure space and need not be touched on every GC cycle. Slide 14, please. Let's talk quickly about how this policy works. Heap is divided into two areas, nursery and tenured, and there are two kinds of collections with GenCon policy. Minor collection, which takes place only in nursery space, and this nursery collection is called scavenge operation, and major collection, which is the traditional mark, sweep, compact, stop the world collector, and takes place in new and old generation spaces. If you refer to figures on this chart, Figure 8 shows the nursery is split into two spaces, allocate space where new objects are allocated and survivor space where a nursery garbage collection will copy surviving objects from allocate space. So when allocate space is full, a scavenge operation is performed. Here, the allocate space is traced and live objects are copied from allocate space into the survivor space, and the count of number of times each object has been scavenged and copied is incremented. The hope here is that most of the objects would have died young and there won't be many objects to copy. Notice the copied objects are placed contiguously in the survivor space, and this results in implicit incremental compaction and better locality for hardware access. Now going to figure B, at end of scavenge operation, the survivor space and the allocate space pointers are flipped. So the survivor space now becomes the new allocate space. Going to figure C, any objects that survive the threshold age, objects that have survived specific numbers of scavenge operations are copied to the tenured area. So overall, here we have a high likelihood that these major collections will satisfy the object allocation for the application for most of the time and will result in frequent small pauses with low GC overhead by working only on smaller part of heap. And when minor collection is not able to allocate space for new objects, global collection will take place in nursery and tenure space. So now with this quick overview, let's talk about what can be done to tune the heap size and GenCon policy. Slide 15, please. Slide 15. So how to tune GenCon policy? Basically, there are two approaches that you can use, dynamic approach and fixed approach. With dynamic approach, you can set the min-max heap size, and underneath the cover, JVM will resize the nursery and tenure space as we are running along. Out of box, it is a good thing to test it initially. One thing you might end up is, we limit the nursery size to 64 meg with this autonomic tuning. So nursery size won't grow larger than that. So if you have very aggressive application that is allocating lots of temporary objects, you will see frequent GC policies, GC pauses, which is something you might not want to see. However, this default self-adjusting behavior is usually sufficient for many applications. The next approach is fixed approach. For performance-sensitive applications, fixed is typically what we are doing, where you set nursery and tenure space parameters. Here you would set your heap size and you set these parameters as well. Slide 16, please. So what are the options to size nursery and tenure space? It is not much different from how we specify min-max heap size, which is XMS and XMX. Same idea, just throw in N for nursery and O for old or tenure space. There is another hybrid option, -XMN-XMO for nursery and tenure space respectively, which will specify the min and max size to equal. That is, it basically locks the sizes, no growing or shrinking over here. We would highly recommend to fix the nursery space. There is huge overhead shrinking and expanding the nursery space. So please lock down the nursery space for better performance. We have tested it out, and fixing or locking the nursery space definitely gives better performance. Slide 17, please. So here is little guidance on how to set tenure space and nursery space. Typically start running your application with flat heap mode and determine the correct heap size under steady state. Then you need to divide this heap size into the tenure space and nursery space. Typically what you would want to do is large nursery space and small tenure space. This will give you best performance. For WebSphere application server, we have found out that tenure space typically needs to be within 100 and 400 meg. Of course, this is going to be dependent on your application. If your application is using object grid or so, you should set the tenure space larger. This old space should be thought of as all the long-lived objects, all the data caches that are going to be stay for long are going to get moved in this old space. Make sure you analyze verbose GC to understand how frequently the tenure space gets collected. If you grab the verbose GC, spike reflects the major collections where tenure space is collected. An optimal generational application will never have or will have very infrequent collections in tenure space. Nursery space. Good WebSphere performance requires a reasonably large nursery space. I guess the slide is showing some weird characters over here. The text here should be large nursery space will give is good for throughput. A good starting point here would be 512 megabytes. Again, make sure you analyze verbose GC to understand the frequency and length of scavenge, as having too small or too large nursery space has its own disadvantages. Slide 18, please. This chart shows comparison of one of our test cases with flat heap model with 1 gig heap and with GenCon policy with 1 gig heap with 256 and 512 meg nursery space. Output you are seeing are snapshot of summary given by verbose GC post-processing tools. Link for these tools are given in the resources slide. Here we got optimum performance with GenCon policy with 512 nursery space. So with 512 nursery space, we are seeing improvements in throughput and massive improvements in cost time. So the key message to take away from here is try out GenCon policy in your environment, compare it with flat heap models, analyze the verbose GC logs to see the overall GC overhead pause times. It might happen that in some applications, GenCon does not give benefits. However, we have seen performance benefits from GenCon in many scenarios. So give a shot and see if GenCon works for your environment. Now let's have a contest switch. Surya will now talk about EJB and runtime tunings that can be leveraged with WAS 6.1. Surya, to you.
Thanks, Bhushan. Along with the improved JDK, WebSphere 6.1 also introduced some new features and improve the existing features for better performance. We are going to go over two of these features today for the time considerations: the lightweight local mode and the bounded buffer. The Azure 6.1 provides a special operational mode called lightweight local mode, which can improve performance of entity beans up to 30% reduction of pre-invoke and post-invoke costs are possible. You can decide which entity beans in your application will run in this mode. In lightweight local mode, the container streamlines your application, and it will run in the, which application and which bean needs to be run in this mode. Now in slide 19, we are going over the lightweight local modes for entity beans and bounded buffer tuning, and more details on slide 20. Slide 20, please. Yeah, what is lightweight local mode? In lightweight local mode, the container streamlines the processing, as I mentioned, and we can select which entity bean we would like to use this lightweight local mode with. This streamlining can result in the improved performance when entity bean operations are called either locally from within application. Lightweight local mode is patterned somewhat after the plain old Java object, the POJO entity model introduced in EJB 3.0 specification. Because some processing is skipped when running a lightweight local mode, it can only be used in certain scenarios. So we have some restrictions in using lightweight local mode. The lightweight local mode is designed for entity beans that are created, found, and called using the session facade pattern. Under this pattern, entity bean, local home, and local business methods are called from within methods of a stateless session bean or stateful session bean. The session bean methods, which may be called remotely or locally, provide the security control and transaction demarcation for the entity beans assessed, accessed by the session bean. Now, moving on to slide 21. We will talk about how we can apply the lightweight local mode to the entity beans. There are two ways you can apply lightweight local mode to specific entity beans within your application. The first one is the EJB environment variable technique. The second one is the marker interface technique. To use the EJB environment variable, edit the EJB deployment descriptor for your entity bean using any standard J2EE development tool, such as the Rational Application Developer. Just create an EJB environment variable with the name COM IBM WebSphere EJB Container Lightweight Local, and set the type of that variable to a Boolean, and set that to true, and apply to apply as a lightweight local mode. And if you set that to false, you have a normal bean. To use the second mode, that is a marker interface, code your bean implementation class to implement COM IBM WebSphere EJB container lightweight local interface. The bean implementation class, it need not be directly an implementation of the interface. Any parent class or interface may also implement it. For additional information about the marker interface, you can go to the info center. Now, moving on to slide 22, the runtime of WebSphere 6.1, there are major improvements done internally, and one of them is the complete redesign of the bounded buffer. The objectives of the new design are primarily preventing any potential race condition without loss of performance, and reducing the latency and contention on the buffer's lock structures, hence increasing both speed and throughput. In contrast to the earlier design, we now use only one counter for both put and take operations, and this counter has been declared as the JDK5 atomic integer variable. Even though the new bounded buffer has been optimized for normal workloads, it can still be tuned for certain workloads and operating systems, and we have seen a performance boost of up to 10 to 15% in certain scenarios with proper tuning. Now we will go over the various tuning parameters that we have exposed with this new design. Moving on to slide 23. There are five tuning parameters that we can use to tune the boundary buffer. Generally, access to the boundary buffer is most efficient if the buffer is neither full nor empty. There are several parameters to configure and balance the overall operation of a WebSphere system such that this condition is met in the common case. Example, the number of web container threads or ARP threads. They can be tuned first. These parameters are independent of the boundary buffer, and they, once we tune them, and still if we see the performance is not as expected, then we can go to the boundary buffer tuning. These five parameters, the operation of the boundary buffer, which is controlled by these five, the first parameter is the spin stake. Spin stake specifies the number of attempts a web container thread will make to take a request from the buffer before it spends, suspends and enqueues in case the buffer is empty. This value allows to trade off the cost of repeated, possibly unsuccessful attempts to take with the cost to suspend a thread and activate it in response to a put operation. The second parameter is the yield take. Yield take specifies if a thread yields the CPU to other threads between subsequent attempts to take an item from the buffer. The other two parameters, the spins put and yield put, are a ditto, the exact dual of the other two parameters. However, they are not applicable for the web container thread, but for the inbound reader threads that attempt to put items into the buffer. The fifth tuning parameter, which is really useful, is the wait time. The wait time specifies the maximum duration that a request might unnecessarily be delayed if the buffer is completely full or empty in the presence of an idle putter or taker thread. Wait time is specified in milliseconds, and a value of 10,000 has been shown to work well in practice. Smaller values of wait time guarantee a more timely request, but in the very rare cases, at some runtime expense in cases when the buffer becomes either full or empty. The number that we use for boundary buffer is any positive number above 100. Like the range we have seen, the best is from 1,000 to 100,000 is the range that we have seen better performance under certain operating systems. Now moving on to slide 24, to summarize, there are many optimizations and new features in the WebSphere 6.1 that will improve the performance of your applications. The improvements are in JDK 1.5, web container and EJB container, web services, and also the reduction of startup and memory footprint. As Bhushan mentioned, the generational garbage collection policy can increase the performance of most of the transactional workloads. Even though the default behavior is sufficient, for the special cases, you can use the several controls provided to improve the performance. Fashioned after EJB 3.0 POJO model, lightweight local mode can be used for entity beams to improve the performance. Lastly, even though the boundary buffer is optimized by default, in certain scenarios and operating systems, one can improve the performance further with the new tuning parameters provided. That summarizes today's session, and moving on to slide 25, there are some additional WebSphere product resources. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcast and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And lastly, the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Moving on to slide 26, there are some more additional resources that are specific to the topic, today's topic. These are the links to the WebSphere 6 advanced tuning presentations and the WebSphere server performance website. And there are some diagnostic guides for IBM JVMs. You'll get more information on how to diagnose and tune better. And also an overview of the functions and features in the IBM implementation of JDK 5. And there are some tools available to visually diagnose, like the verbose GC garbage collection tool from IBM AlphaWorks, and also documentation tuning for the Sun JVM, and wealth of other information for other non-IBM vendors. Now, back to you, Alicia.
Thank you, Sarah and Bashan, for a great presentation.
We'll take our first question from Dilip Kumar.
I wanted to ask some questions about the AIO implementation for the Bib containers. Now, you wanted to understand whether it goes through the JNI layer or does some native processing or like it's all Java. How they are hooking up to the OS level, kernel level calls.
Yeah, so for each platform, we are giving a native library that will hook up the JVM with the native layer. So, and to disable the AIO, like if you just like remove that or rename that library, it will get back to NIO. So, net answer is that we are shipping a native library for each kernel.
Yeah.
And
it
uses JNI?
Pardon me?
So, how the communication happens with the Java and the native layer? Like you use JNI or like some other mechanism?
Yeah, it has how it works is each it will try to AIO is mainly to exploit the asynchronous features that are available on each platform, and yes, it uses those through the JNI.
Thank you. And then one more follow other questions on the EJB containers. Is there any parameter that directly we can look into the Tivoli performance viewer and that we can relate to the set the cache size for EJB? Because the cache bucket size is all the time is unknown to like everyone dealing with those parameters, right?
So your question is whether there is any specific cached tuning that you can see from the rational tool or something?
No. So I'm saying like there is a parameter called EJB cache size, right?
Yep.
How do we, like, when we look at the performance Tivoli viewer, what is the parameter that we can relate to tune this particular parameter?
Yeah, if you have, in the Tivoli performance viewer, if you see there is, if you're using a stateful session beans and, you know, there is a repeated flush outs or, you know, like some kind of, if you see there is an increased passivation occurring, right? So at that point, yes, you know that you need to increase the cache size here.
So what does the cache size mean? It's a bucket of like number of EJB instances. Is that right, or like it's just representing one EJB instance?
It's a number of EJB instances.
And how many numbers goes into one cache? That's variable or like it's fixed?
Yes. How many of the total instances of the EJBs that you can hold in the cache before, you know, it can go back and, you know, just dump some of them and then recreate, put some of the new instances into the cache.
Okay. So let's say like there is a default number of 3052 or something like that. So if we use that one, that can hold how many instances of EJBs?
Yes, that is. The default is 2048. Yes, that many instances. And normally, for a better performance, we expect, for instance, for a SPECJ runs that we do, we bump it up to around 35053. There is around 35,000.
So one instance per cache entry.
Yeah.
One instance per cache entry.
Yeah. And like, yeah, if you go to the previous webcast, we have in fact given some guidelines on how you should tune your EJB cache size. It goes in pretty much good detail to help setting this EJB cache size.
Yeah, I think you guys put a formula also, but like we never figured out a way to go through that formula and get to the right number. So
yes.
Like most of the time it goes through like guessing wild guesses.
If you go to that formula, there, you know, I think we have given each parameter there. And if you have any specific questions, you can actually send me a note and we can answer that.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go next to Prashad Swaminara.
Hi, just wanted to ask, like, is this WebSphere 6.1 optimized or tested to run? I mean, I know it is mentioned it supports J2EE 1.2, 1.3, and 1.4, and if you plan to run like J2EE 1.3, which is basically JDK 142, is this WebSphere 6.1 optimized and tested for that specific version?
First of all, that, like, if it will run or not is different question, but like it's not supported. Like WebSphere 6.1 is supposed to run with JDK 1.5 and that to the Java version which has been shipped with the WebSphere. You can't point it to some external version of JVM, even JVM 5, and it will work. It has to be the version which is underneath and which is shipped with WAF.
No, I mean, I wanted to ask, like, let's put this way. We are not going to change that JVM, but let's say we compile the J2EE application with JDK 142 and use even the compilation time, use J2EE 1.3. How WebSphere 6.1 behave in that situation? I'm not talking about like changing the JVM of the WebSphere, but I'm talking about, let's say, if we compile our J2EE with JDK 142 and J2EE, 1.3.
Do you mean to say that running your app J2EE 1.3 application on WAF 6.1?
Yes. I mean, is there any kind of like optimization or testing or all those kind of things are done? And I'm not looking for a perfect answer, but ballpark figure, like how it behaves, you know. I mean, because there are a lot of other dependencies, and we think like it could be a good idea for us to basically compile our application with JDK 142. And J2E basically 1.3 and run then under the WAF 6.1.
In 6.1, we made sure that because there are some dependencies, right? You know, we have taken extra care not to use the JDK 1.5 features extensively, so that that we won't break the dependency here for our other products of WebSphere, as well as some of the client products. So to answer your question, if you have your application JDK 1.142 and you are running on WebSphere 6.1, frankly, we haven't optimized that scenario, but it should run. And to give you, at this point, I don't have any idea how much the performance improvement you will see when you move from earlier version of WebSphere to 6.1 in that back level JDK.
Yeah, because like I keep on seeing this statement from IBM that it is backward compatible J2EE 1.2, 1.3, and basically so these are the previous versions, you know.
Yeah, it is backward compatible. Like your previous EJB on point one, you know, that can run. You know, you don't need to go to only 2.1. Like that is the same even if you go to like next version of WebSphere, right? We will have the backward compatibility. The question of whether it is optimized well to take advantage of the performance improvements in the next version. In some scenarios, we will have them, but you know, we cannot exactly say the same performance improvements you can see with the back level. Because, for instance, take the local EJV, local like a lightweight local. You know, you cannot use that for you know, EJB 1.1 because it does not have any local interface support. And this feature is useful only if you have the HD beans with the local local interface support. That is possible in 2.1.
Not right? Not even in 2.0.
It is 2.1 mode that you know we have this support.
Okay.
So like that, these extra features you may not be able to exploit. That way, you know, you may not be able to see that much improvement that, you know, we say, you know, yeah, we have in this release. But definitely, yes, you can run the backward compatible, backward, you know, J2E levels in this product.
Okay, thank you very much.
As a reminder, to ask a question or make a comment, please press *1 at this time. We'll go next to Balan Pini.
This is Balan Pini. I looked at your Java 5 1.5 presentation where you have specified something to do with Java deserialization. I couldn't understand that particular point. Can you just say a few words about it?
You are on which slide?
One of your slide, you had specified the improvements made with Java 1.5, something to do with deserialization, the Java's serialization and deserialization technique.
I'm trying to see, like, I'm not sure you are referring to which slide because I'm not able to.
Okay.
But
that's
fine. Yeah, I don't know.
Is there anything in your knowledge where there is a performance improvement with serialization and deserialization for 1.5 Java?
Not that I am aware of.
Okay.
If there are performance improvements from improved deserialization in web services performance.
Okay. Thanks.
We'll move next to Servina Skujam. Mr. Kunsen, your line is open.
Hi, this is Srinivas Kunsen. We are trying to see if there is a possibility of setting the permanent generation size in IBM WebSphere, IBM JVMs, but looks like Bhushan has replied saying there is no permanent generation in IBM JVMs. That's correct, right?
Yeah, this is to, like, the IBM GenCon policy, they have really tried to simplify it as much as possible. So there is no permanent generation space. Which you might want to tune is the nursery space and the tenure space. And many other parameters like the flip count or the age are like autonomically tuned beneath. And yeah, there is no permanent generation space.
Oh, so even in 6.1 there is no permanent generation.
Yeah, with IBM JVM 5 itself, like with Sun JVM there is, but with IBM JVM there is no permanent generation space for you to tune.
So they're all stored in the regular heap, which is
yeah, so those objects will eventually get into the tenure space.
Oh, okay, got it.
And one benefit from this is, like, since we don't have any objects which can't be moved, we don't have any residual fragmentation, so any kind of fragmentation can be removed with the compaction cycle, and there just won't be any, like, errors or, like, due to fragmentation, like, which could not be solved.
Okay, good.
We'll now go to Jose Osef.
Yeah, hi. My question is, so these days, you know, people use the static files also on the app server along with the EF file. Have you done any benchmark testing, you know, if you use the static files on the web server instead of the app server, what is the performance difference?
So static files on the app server, you mean?
The static files also, these days, come on the EF file.
Yes, the static files, of course, the original intent is to, have the static files on the web server instead of the app server. But yes, you're right, nowadays, yes, we have that. We tried to optimize our channel framework to better serve the static file as well as some of the JSP improvements. Yes, we are better in 6.1 compared to 6.02 and earlier versions, but we don't have the performance data that we can share right now. But maybe I can send you if I find some performance data in this space.
Oh, okay. So another question is, what is the maximum heap size that you have seen for any application? Like, if you have 64 GB of RAM, what is the maximum that for any application that you have seen?
The maximum application that, you're talking about, what is the heap size that, again, that depends on your, environment and your system, right? So in our lab, when we do our benchmarking, we go up to 2 gig. If you're talking about 64 GB, 64-bit machines, yes, we will go a little bit higher. But for the 32-bit, operating systems that we have gone up to like 2 GB.
Yep, for 64-bit, like, ideally there won't be a theoretical limit. It will be, like, the physical limit on your machine.
Now, actually, my question is, practically what do you have in the, highest heap size for any application?
And again,
generally, I have seen 2 GB, but what I'm asking is, if you go, like, if you said 10 GB or 16 GB, does the performance increase or?
Yeah, performance, again, like the previous webcast talks on in which circumstances to use 64-bit, but if your application is doing lots of encryption or decryption or let's say some calculus or calculus applications, or it is doing intensive caching where it is caching the images in max size, then you would want to go for higher heap size. But if your application doesn't need, and if you increase your heap to 10 gig, then you are unnecessarily going to see, like, larger heap is not going to help unless you need it. So there are certain kind of applications like cryptographic security where you need high heap size, then only you would want to go for higher heap. And again, if you go on the WebSphere performance side, there is one nice paper on 64-bit performance on when, in which situation you would want to go for.
Yeah, sometimes, people use vertical clustering to make use of the capacity of the box. So does vertical clustering really, help get more performance?
Yeah, that is another thing, like, whether you want to have multiple JVMs on the same box, like you're talking about, whether clustering that, just to use that or that's like kind of two different ways. If you want to, again, there are some limitations on the operating system itself to, how much you can increase the heap as well. Some of the operating systems won't support more than, 2048 MB. So we have to, as Bhushan mentioned, we haven't done that limits test to see, okay, how much we have gone on the single box, increasing the heap size to maybe 10 GB or something. Because you have to have the application that requires that heap size to get the performance that you're looking for.
Okay.
We'll go next to Dilip Kumar.
Hi, this is about the stack size on the Solaris platform. Why do you set it to 512 KB? Instead of default of 128 that comes with the Sun JVM. Is there any reason for that?
Can you repeat your question?
The stack size on the Solaris that comes with the Sun JVM, you set it to 512 KB as opposed to the Sun JVM default of 128 KB. Is there any reason to that?
I'm not aware right away, but if you can send me an email or something, I will try to follow up on this.
Like that's Sun, right?
Set to 512 K.
Okay. So you boost Sun, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, I will follow up.
Yep.
And what are the other reasons that you can't expand the heap beyond like 2 GB?
This is for 32-bit JVM, like you can't expand beyond 2 GB because that's how the operating system works. Like the maximum limit for process size is going to be 2^31. So that's why it's 2 gig. And ideally still it's not going to be 2 gig because 2 gig is the limit for any process that would run on a 32-bit OS. So out of that two gig, some memory would be used for operating system to manage the JVM process. Some memory would be needed for native heap. So this varies on each platform how much heap you can allocate varies from platform to platform, but it usually goes somewhere between 1 to 1.5 gig for Java heap, and rest all is used for native heap and for OS to manage the Java process. But 2 gig is the limit for any process, not only Java process, on a 32-bit machine.
And if we set it beyond, it is going to run into, like, so how about the growth? Like, can we see the, like, is there any problem? Like, it starts growing over a period of time, or, like, if I run it for 1 hour and I don't see any growth, that should be the behavior, right?
Yeah, and if it's growing and growing, that definitely means that you have some leak in your application, and then you would have to watch out for verbose GC logs or graph it to see the trend. So verbose GC would be first place to see if it's growing, and if it's growing, that is some signal of memory leak in your application.
Okay. Thank you.
And as a final reminder, to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 at this time. We'll move next to Rick Zeller.
Hello. There's been a lot of talk about 32 versus 64-bit. And I'd like, this is not to beat anybody up or anything, but I'm a little curious if you guys know why the Sun 1 web server plugin is only available in 32-bit. Why can't they release a 64-bit version so that we can run this entire Sun 1 in 64-bit and get better performance for the WebSphere plugin?
Unfortunately, Surya and I don't work intensively on 64-bit, but if you can send up a follow-up note, I will try to work with the guys who work on 64-bit and try to see why it's not available on Sun 1.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, go ahead.
And also, like, this is your question is specific to the support for the plugin, right? So
yeah, in this case, yeah.
Yeah. So I will definitely follow up with the plugin team to see any specific issue here. For we are not aware of that.
Is your email address in the?
Yeah, it's there. If you see on the participants, there is a Surya surya@us.ibm.com.
I wasn't able to get into the meeting itself. It's not on the PDF, or is it?
It is there on the PDF, too.
Okay, I can find it on that then. I tried getting in the meeting itself. I don't have the right versions of Java. And we have restrictions here what we can run, so I just...
Yeah, if you can just... I can follow it up with, whether we have any plans to, have the 64-bit version. At this point, we don't know more about that.
All right, thanks. That was my extent of my questions. Good job. Thanks. Appreciated the training.
Thank you.
And we'll go next to Joe Korchmar.
Yeah, hello, this is Joe Korchmar. I got a question if there's any changes to the IBM JVM or if there are any recommendations to help or aid in the startup of a J2E container. So when you're starting the app server, sometimes the start times are slow because of the heap adjustments you made so that your application performs well.
That is again a classic question of whether we improve the startup and footprint or give a better runtime performance. We always juggle these two balls because they both, you know, go in opposite directions, right? So
yeah, they can, yeah.
So we always try to, you know, get in the next release, we are, you know, our focus again is to reduce the startup time and memory footprint without affecting the runtime performance. We started that in JDK 5.0, with the 6.1. Yes, I know we still have some issues that the challenge here is as we offer more and more functional things into the product, of course the memory footprint increases and we have to the startup time. We are in the next release. We are trying to delink some of them, and we want to go with dynamically. You know, if you want to enable some features, if you don't use those features, yes, they will be disabled by default, and that will improve the startup time. When you need them, you know, dynamically, it will be enabled in at the runtime. So. Yes, we are working towards that, and we will see some improvements in the next release.
I was just wondering if they had any changes to set initial heap up the higher side, and then after JVM's been up for a little bit, go ahead and readjust to your min and max. Something that simple.
So you're saying, increase it in a...
Tell me, here's what I want you to start with, and as long as JVM hasn't been up for 2 minutes, leave it at that, and then once it gets up to 2 minutes, go ahead and start working towards your min and max.
You
get away from the asking it from another chunk. And then the second question I had was as far as the web container threads and where you're allowed to have growable. Are there any changes or tuning parameters around there where you can selectively tell it when to allow growable versus not, so I could get better performance tuning around flow response times versus additional load and the app server consuming all the resources? And I could probably take that offline with you. It'll be more complex of a question.
Yeah, there are some ways you can, if you can send a note, I will explain, how to tune that.
Yep.
Mr. Kretschmar, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you. We'll move next to Laura Garzali.
Hi, my question is for Bhushan, and it's in regards to the max heap size and considering the node agent heap size. For 64-bit platforms, what is the default that I should set up for node agent?
This depends on how big is your, if you have set up cluster and how big is your cluster. Like if your cluster is having 16 machines or something, there would be high communication going on and then you might need little more heap size. But if your cluster to begin with, the default size on at least 32 bits is 128 meg, and that suffices for the reasonable size clusters, cluster with four machines or so, but if your cluster is increasing, then there would be more load on the node agent communicating you with the high availability manager. So if your cluster is growing, then I would say you might have to analyze the verbose GC log and see where it is, if your heap is getting exhausted and at what frequency it is getting exhausted. If you see GC is happening pretty regularly at high frequency, then you might want to increase heap size. But in most cases we have seen, usually we don't have to twiggle around with the heap size on node agent.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're seeing issues, I would say analyze verbose GC and see how frequently GC is happening. If it's happening very frequently and taking more than 15% of your CPU time, then you need to increase it.
Okay, thank you.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the Web Series Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today.